Week November 17, 23, compiled by Dave Humphrey from the archived newspapers held at the Cranbrook History Center and Archives. 1917. Tragedy at Bull River. On Tuesday morning last, a man named James Young, who had been employed as a tie maker at Peterson's Camp, Bull River, went to Camp 6 and informed the storekeeper there that he had killed a man. The police and the coroner were immediately notified, and on arrival of the police, they proceeded to Peterson's Camp, where they found the dead body of William Hull lying in his bunk, death apparently having been caused by wounds in the head. A blood-stained axe was found leaning against the wall of the shack. Young was taken into custody and conveyed to Bull River Police Station, where he gave his name as John Francis Welch. An inquest on the body of William Hull was held on Thursday evening, but at a late hour the verdict of the jury had not been returned. The preliminary hearing takes place on Tuesday next. Several stories are in circulation as to the events which led up to the tragedy. It is also rumored that the man who is now in custody, on his own confession, is a returned soldier and served in France for a considerable length of time. The coroner's jury wished to view the scene of the tragedy and, being unable to arrange for teams, were obliged to walk a matter of 16 miles. Runaway creates excitement. Several persons narrowly escaped serious injury on Tuesday when a team attached to a wagon belonging to Mr. Parnaby took fright and bolted on Hanson Avenue. They turned down Lewis Street and deposited the wagon in sections at various telephone poles. Mrs. H.A. McCowan and her sister, Miss Cartwright, who were approaching from the opposite direction in an automobile, gave the runaways as wide a berth as possible, and avoiding a head-on collision, escaped with some damage to the car. Less fortunate were a local rancher and his wife, who were overtaken by the team, thrown from their buggy and considerably bruised and shaken. The horses were eventually stopped near the Catholic Church. Local Exemption Tribunal. The Local Exemption Tribunal, presided over by Messrs. H. White and G. F. Pownall, with Major Nation as the military representative, have had a busy week. During the week, 52 exemption claims were heard, with the following results. 21 were ordered to appear before the medical board for examination on November 25. 3 were in Class B. 8 were in Class C. 5 were in Class E. 8 claims were disallowed. 4 conditional exemptions were granted. 3 were exempted. News from Boys at the Front. Mr. Bruce Brown has received the following interesting letter from Sergeant J. Milne. Dear Bruce, I don't know how many questions you asked me in your last letter, as I have mislaid it somewhere, but I have a few hours at my disposal today and thought I would drop you a few lines just to say that I am well and am not looking for souvenirs, as it's an unhealthy job out here. I have not been up the line this time yet, but expect to soon. Had the pleasure of visiting some of Fritz's cement cellars. They make very good dugouts. Have just read a letter taken from a Hun on Hill 70. Rotten thing to do, as it was intended for his people at home. He was telling them that he had just moved into a quiet part of the line. I suppose it was when he was writing, but it must have livened up before he got it posted, so you see life is very uncertain here. Of course we all believe we are coming through without a scratch, but saw Percy Adams a couple of days ago. He is here with the machine gun company and looking quite well. How are things in the old town now? Hope it is still alive? How is conscription coming up? Herbert Clark returning. Mr. John F. Smith has received a telegram from Private H.S. Clark, sent from Quebec, and stating that he is on the way home. Private Clark was wounded in the eye at Vimy Ridge. Domestic science education. Classes in domestic science will be opened in January in connection with King Edward School and under a fully trained instructor. Cooking, dressmaking, millinery, and laundry will be taught. Evening work will be arranged if a sufficient number of pupils desire it. Miss Charrington will be glad to hear from those who wish to take up the course, as soon as possible. William Smith passes. The death of William Smith of Wycliffe occurred at the St. Eugene Hospital on Wednesday morning. About a month ago, the deceased, who was employed by the Staples Lumber Company, at Wycliffe, met with an accident and was severely burned. For a time he seemed to be making satisfactory progress towards recovery, but suffered a relapse and passed away on Wednesday. The funeral took place on Thursday. Kimberley News. The Sullivan Mine and Workings has closed down for a while, which throws nearly 300 men out of employment. The Trail Smelter has also closed down, which brings the number of unemployed into the thousands. Honor Roll. The Honor Roll of Central School will be unveiled, and a good program rendered under the auspices of the Junior Red Cross Society at Central School on Friday, November 23 at 8 o'clock. Dr. Green will act as chairman. The following will take part: Mrs. A. B. McDonald, Mrs. McPherson, Mrs. Thompson, Mr. Worthington, Mrs. Walker, Miss Wanda Fink, Miss Helen Worden, and Miss Eunice Parrott. Short speeches by local men, choruses by Junior Red Cross Society. All welcome. A collection will be taken to defray expenses of parcels sent to the boys at the front. Medal awarded. Word has been received from the Office of the Minister of Defense, Wellington, New Zealand, that Alexander Beaton, brother of J.E. Beaton, CPR Yardmaster, Cranbrook, has been awarded the Military Medal for gallantry on the field of action. He enlisted 2 years ago in a New Zealand battalion. Elko News. Gorman, the human ferret, certainly cleared the conversation juice from the old historic burg. Still, there are four cabarets selling distilled sheep herder's delight, moon's silvery rays, raspberry vinegar, and a dark-colored horse medicine they call 2%. But the barbed wire booze seems to be a thing of the past. An open letter. To all who voted for or supported Prohibition in the campaign of 1916, and to all who have benefited from Prohibition since the Act came into force. Through our combined efforts, we won a signal victory. In the securing of the Prohibition Act, we aided materially in the winning of the war, by thus conserving foodstuffs, men, and money. Let it be understood our activities have not ceased, rather they have only begun. Patriotically, we stand behind every effort to win the war. Many of our number are overseas, and many more have given their nearest and dearest to do battle for the liberties of the world. Another opportunity presents itself whereby we may further do our bit for the dominion and the empire of which we form a part, namely, by purchasing and assisting in the sale of victory bonds. We therefore urge upon you the necessity of doing your utmost at this present juncture in purchasing bonds to the limit of your powers, and use your personal influence to have others do the same. Many have benefited from the coming into force of the Prohibition Act and should be urged to invest their savings in victory bonds. Prohibitionists have the welfare of the nation at heart. Let us do our best that there be no lack of funds to carry on the war to a successful issue. In behalf of the Prohibition Association, Jonathan Rogers, President. W.G.W. Fortune, General Sec. Christchurch Bazaar. The annual bazaar held in the Christchurch Parish Hall on Wednesday proved highly successful in all respects. The bazaar was opened by the rector, the Reverend F.V. Harrison, who congratulated the ladies of the church on the result of their efforts, through which a large and attractive assortment of useful and ornamental articles had been prepared. The Herald reporter, being a mere man, cannot be expected to enter into a detailed description of the items offered for sale, but the remarks of visitors to the bazaar and the rapidity with which purchases were being made demonstrated the attractive qualities of the goods displayed. An excellent feature of the bazaar was the Hannah stall. Bearing in mind the wishes of the food controller and the necessity for the conservation of sugar, the committee decided to eliminate the usual candy counter and replaced same with a good assortment of cookery, prepared with due regard to the food control regulations. During the afternoon, a program of musical items and physical drill was given by the girls of the Eager Heart Club under the direction of Miss Richardson, also a very pretty dance by Miss Patricia McDermott. The following ladies had charge of the various stalls: Women's Guild, Madame G. Hogarth and F. R. Morris. Babies Wear, Madame G. H. Thompson, F. W. Green. Home Workers Booth, Madame J. F. Smith, A. Cameron, C. Hersey. Cookery, Madame W. J. Flowers, Fenton, G. Smith. Fish Pond, Madame D. Burton, Hartnell, Armstrong, E. A. Parker. Hannah Table, Madame F. V. Harrison, J. Burton. Tea was served by Madame Erickson and Nelson. The dance in the evening was as successful as the bazaar had been in the afternoon. The music provided by the Cranbrook Orchestra being up to their usual high standard. The total amount realized from the bazaar and dance was over $400. Victory Loan Committee. The members of the committee and the canvassers have been busy during the past week bringing the Victory Loan to the notice of the public. A great deal of advertising matter has been put out, and the outlying districts have been organized. A number of canvassers are calling on the citizens and will be glad to answer any inquiries. The canvassers have application forms with them and these can be filled out and handed to the canvassers, or the applications may be made direct to the banks. In order to assist in the work as much as possible, it is hoped that the applicants will make use of the check form attached to the application instead of the undertaking to pay form. The canvassers do not under any circumstances receive the cash, and the local committee does not handle the money. It is quite immaterial whether the applicants hand their application to the canvassers or to the banks. A meeting of the Farmers Institute was held at Fort Steele yesterday and several went from Cranbrook to assist in the sale of victory bonds. Meetings will be held today at Wardner and at Bull River. It is rather remarkable that up to the present the amount of applications from outlying districts has been quite large in proportion to the total amount subscribed by the Cranbrook district. The committee would like to emphasize the fact that they are particularly anxious to get in the small subscriptions of $50. $0 and $100 as the large subscriptions usually take care of themselves. Basket Social. A concert and basket social was held at Fort Steele on Wednesday evening in aid of the relief fund for the farmers of the Allied nations who have suffered loss in consequence of the war. The entertainment was held under the auspices of the Farmers Institute. There was a large attendance and an excellent musical program was given. President E. H. McPhee and Secretary A. B. Smith attended as representatives of the Cranbrook Institute. The Victory Loan Committee was also represented by G. J. Sproul and R. T. Williams of Cranbrook, who spoke briefly on the subject of the loan. At the Rex. There was a large attendance at the Rex Theatre on Sunday evening to hear Mr. W. E. Cowan's address on the work the National Institute for the Blind is doing for the soldiers and sailors of the British Empire who have lost their sight. The meeting was held under the auspices of the local chapter IOD. Mr. G. J. Sproul occupied the chair and in introducing Mr. Cowan, dealt briefly with the work of the Institute and mentioned that to the present very few of the Canadian soldiers had needed the course of training provided for those who have been blinded in the war. Mr. Cowan gave a description of St. Dunstan's Hostel, London, England, an old English mansion, loaned by its owner, to the Institute. Some idea of the size of the building is obtained when one learns that there is accommodation for about 500 patients. Instead of those who have lost sight being shut off from participation in the everyday life of the world, the training given them at St. Dunstan's enables them to rejoin the ranks of the wage earners and to become self-supporting. All men are taught the touch system of typewriting and provided with typewriters so that they have a ready means of communication with their friends. Many learn shorthand and become sufficiently proficient to secure remunerative positions. As an instance, a blind Canadian soldier in Toronto is earning $85 per month as a stenographer. Another interesting item in the address was the information that blind men are being trained as divers, and by means of their sensitive touch make efficient workmen underwater. Boot repairing, basket making and other trades are also taught. At the close of the address, films were shown illustrative not only of the course of instruction, but of the recreational side of life at St. Dunstan's. That the cause appealed to Cranbrook people was evidenced by the collection taken up, which amounted to $78, in addition to which, Mr. Cowan, accompanied by a few businessmen, made a canvass of the downtown section of the city on Monday, when the further sum of $197.50 was subscribed.